This is the workshop steps 1, 2, and 3, and I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Katie.
I'm an addict named Katie.
Hey,
family.
My dad's off.
Yeah, I'm probably not growing any. Well, not growing in height wise.
How's that?
That's perfect. Thank you. I'm an addict named Katie.
Hey.
Thank you to the Northeast Freedom Area Convention Committee for putting this on and asking an addict like me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm always humbled when people ask me to share, you know, because it's always a privilege to carry the message for Narcotics Anonymous, right? Like, it's always a privilege to be asked to do anything for NA. Also, to the God of my own understanding, because I think sometimes I take for granted the little things in life, right? Like, even just driving up here, and, you know, you just sometimes don't think about that there are people out there that are losing their lives right at that moment, right? Like, I'm getting irritated because people cut me off, and you know, just having that realization that, you know, sometimes this day is the worst day in somebody else's life, you know? Not for me today, though. You know, instead I'm at a Narcotics Anonymous convention, so just for today, not me. But thank you, Tammy, for asking me to share. And I was reflecting on the topic, right? Steps 1, 2, and 3. And like how profound they are. You know, they really are the foundation steps. And when I got here, it was just kind of, we were giggling. Michael and I was giggling because neither one of us can count. We both getting our clean days wrong. Like, you know, I put the 2 instead of the 3. And my clean date is actually November 13, 2012. And it's just kind of funny that, like, you also age, you know. The longer you stay clean, right, and stay around here, you also age. And like, it's wild to me when I think about it that I've been here for over 11 years, and that was not my plan, you know. Like, I came here because the state of Maryland said that I didn't know how to stop catching charges and drive under the influence, or drive without being under the influence. And they said I needed to go to meetings, and I heard the message, right? 90 meetings in 90 days, and, you know, getting used a sponsor and all of that. And on the 91st day, I wasn't supposed to be here. So it always kind of dawns on me that you can't count anybody out. You never know, right? You never know. And when I got here, I was 22 years old. I had made a really, really good mess of my life. I was a shell of a person, and I thought that I just had a drug problem, right? If I could just not use while driving, I'll be all right. And, like, little did I know, it's not just the drug problem, right? But, like, when we go over the steps and we're introduced to the steps, right, and it says we were powerless over our addiction, it doesn't specify, right? Because I don't know about you, but I can make my life really unmanageable with any and everything. And I did. And I had to learn that, like, you know, I am the problem. My thinking is the problem. My shitty coping skills are the problem, right? My pattern of negative behaviors is the problem. It's not just drugs. Surprise. And I just wish that it was something simple, right? Like, at the time, I really just thought, like, oh, it's just drugs. And I just leave it alone. Like, I'll be all right, whatever. And it's amazing that they say the steps are in order for a reason. And you gain awareness, right, over time. And I will tell you that, like, I could admit that I had a problem, right? But that powerlessness was a hard pill to swallow. You know, like, coming to terms with that. And thankfully, like, I have accepted that I can't use no matter what it is. It doesn't matter what the substance is. And so, my God has a very funny sense of humor. Because I typically learn things through other people. Right? It's cool for me, whatever. But, be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it. And sometimes it doesn't come in the form that you thought it would be. And my God does so by using other people in other situations. And I learned powerlessness on a deeper level because of other loved ones. You know, I have parents that are also addicts. I have a mother that still struggles with addiction and, like, really learning, like, how to accept that I'm powerless over her disease. I met my husband in Narcotics Anonymous. Be careful who you dance with at the Ocean City Convention. Because they just might become your baby daddy. And he did. And I didn't think that, you know, I just didn't think it would turn out the way that it did. And, we're married. We have one baby, and we're expecting another. My life is a little ghetto right now because he knocked me up before he left, and he left me with one baby, knocked me up with another, and he is on deployment. That man is 6,000 miles away. And and I had to call him when I found out that I was pregnant again, and I was like, I need to tell you something before somebody else does, or you think the baby's not yours. And 2 weeks after he got to the Middle East, or 3 weeks, whatever it was, I had to let him know, like, oh, we're going to have another baby. And I will tell you that, like, I thought I learned powerlessness with myself. I thought I had learned powerlessness through my mother. I thought I had learned powerlessness, right? And God showed me a whole nother level of powerlessness. My husband is currently stationed in the Middle East. I'm sure you guys know what's going on. And when I tell you, my anxiety has been through the roof. I truly, truly mean that. I thought, like, unmanageability and insanity, I had a grasp on, right? Like, going to jails and being homeless and doing all the crazy stuff that we do, and active addiction was insane. I don't know if you guys have met a toddler before, but they're pretty irrational, you know. And the two-year-old stage is, they're the cutest, but they're so bipolar. You know what I mean? And there's no rationale. There's no justification. And, like, my life is really insane right now. Like, it really is. And I had to really start living in my third step, right? I thought, like, oh, I'm going to turn, you know, my problems over to God. And I know I have a problem. And I can't use no matter what. And blah, 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 right? All of that. If you're a newcomer, let me just tell you, like, put your seatbelt on, because shit gets real around here real quick. And, like, the insanity and the chaos of my life is nothing like it was in active addiction. You know what I mean? I just think that it's funny because I ran from responsibility. Anything
that the word responsible could be attached to, I didn't want any parts of it. Right? And slowly but gradually, from being in Narcotics Anonymous, having a sponsor, working the steps, showing up, doing service work, right? All of these suggestions that people tell us to do, you don't even realize in the moment that they really are the building blocks. I was not a responsible person when I got here. And even for the first, like, 2 or 3 years of my life, teeny tiny amount of responsibility. If the newcomer version of Katie could meet this version of Katie, she would be intimidated. I get shocked some days. I did not know how to be responsible. I did not know how to turn things truly over to my God. And that is where I'm at in life right now. I really am living in my third step because I have to, right? I have to. I have to know that God has a better plan because what I think, right? I don't know if anybody else has anxiety and you catastrophize things, but I do. And a lot of times, I go to the worst case scenario. If you want to know if you have anxiety, have somebody tell you, hey, Kathy, I need to speak with you in private. Do you start freaking out in your head? Because if you do, hey, you probably got anxiety like me. And that's how I operate, right? I go to the worst case scenario possible. And what does that do for me? It destroys my peace. So I'm living this really, really chaotic life a little bit, right? And I have to really tap into my higher power because I'm getting up 6 o'clock in the morning. It's just me. I have a daughter that does. She is not a morning person. I have to get her ready. I got to take her to daycare. I work 8 hours. I have a high-risk pregnancy. My husband is over in a war zone, you know, and I'm trying to stay afloat. Everything is on my shoulders. Everything. And I would never have guessed that this would be my life, right? Because I couldn't pay, I don't know about you guys, but I have some DUIs on my record, and they came with a blow and go, okay? Which is an interlock device. And I couldn't even pay that on time, right, when I was a newcomer and struggling with all of that. And it is wild to me that I manage an entire household and an entire family, right, because there is no other option. I mean, you can fold. I was driving up here, and this is how my God works. He speaks in subtle ways, sometimes through you guys and sometimes through different situations. And as I'm driving up here, I see a car with a bumper sticker that says, failure is not an option. So when I have those moments where I want to give up and I'm frustrated and I'm overwhelmed and I want to cry and break down and all of that, I don't know about you, but I have to pray and I have to, like, ask God, like, please help me in this moment. Like, turn it over, reveal what you need to reveal to me because I don't know what to do right now. And it is hard, and I will tell you, and I know that the battle is just beginning. Because the hardest part of all of this is not the fact that my husband is gone. It's how he's going to integrate back into society that makes it the hardest part about deployment. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but some of us were institutionalized when they got here and had to learn how to be a human again. And I know I've gone through deployment with him before, but it's not the same when you have a baby. You know, and I have to think about, like, her, right? And, like, that's the motivating factor in a lot of stuff where it's like, Michael, you can't do the same things that you did, you know, when you came back before and being angry at the world and having, you know, your struggles and all that. You can't do that now. Like, you have a baby that loves her dad dearly. That is one of the hard parts about this is my daughter. And she loves her dad. And she is very much so a daddy's girl. it's very frustrating for me because I did pretty much all the work, and she's like 90% of them. It's some shit. And then this baby also looks like him too, and I'm like, why, God? Why would you do that to me? And she's really, really much so a daddy's girl, and like, you know, I have to turn him over to God. Not only just his safety, but his recovery and his mental well-being and all that. Yes, I can be, you know, a source of strength, but it's really in God's hands. You know, and that is hard, and it's something that I have to do on a daily basis. It's not just a one-and-done process. I remember talking to a client the other day, and I was telling them, like, forgiveness is not like a light switch. Recovery is not like a light switch, right? Learning the lessons that we learn during this process is not a light switch. It is really, truly an ongoing process, and it's something that most of the time you have to consciously choose. It ain't gonna happen if you don't want it to, if you're not actively working. I just want to let the newcomer know that you don't ever arrive. That's perfect. Because I always have to pee. She gave me the sign, y'all. It's wonderful because the bathroom is my second home, but not how it used to be. Isn't that funny? I used to stay in a bathroom all the time. You know what I mean? Now God has a funny sense of humor. Either I'm throwing up or I gotta pee. It's very messed up. Joyce made me lose my train of thought. You can't do that to me. I got pregnancy brain and sleep deprivation. But no, there's levels, and you don't arrive. And I don't ever want to feel like I made it, right? Like, I want to continue to grow and learn. You ever met somebody who's stuck, who's just guarded, doesn't want to even try to learn new information? And you're like, ugh, I don't want to be like that. I want to constantly get better. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I have to learn things in hard situations. I'm eating my words because I asked God for patience. And you know what God did? Presented me with situations that I had to practice patience with. And it's not easy. That's why I say be careful what you pray for. You just might get it. It's not going to come in the form that you want it to. It's going to come in the form where you need it to in order to learn the lesson. That's the shit that sucks, though. Just so you know, being the bigger person sucks ass every time. It never feels good. You know what I mean? It's never a situation where it feels good. It does not feel good right now. Life does not feel good right now. But I know that there is a reprieve coming. I know that there are blessings coming. I just have to stay in position in order to receive them. I have to stay long enough in order to receive them. So beat that, Mike. Yeah. Anyways, I'm going to add in Katie. Thanks for letting me share.
Can I tell the song a little bit?
I got you.
Going? Just a little taller. So.
Must be nice.
I'm Mike. I'm an addict. Hi. Thanks for your lead. Thanks to the program and committee, man, the convention, Tammy, you know, asking me to come out here to do this, man. I'm always nervous. It's crazy because Katie had about 2 years clean or something like that when I first got here. So I acknowledge nine years in about 2 weeks. So it's pretty cool to be up here, you know, when I first got here, and now I'm up here, you know, sharing a convention where for me, that's like, I don't know, whew. That's, like, amazing for me, you know. So what I was thinking about, man, was, you know, every time I share at a convention, I always think about the January 25th just for today, man. And the title is that is an added gift. You know, and it talks about when we get here, we're broken, you know, and, you know, we're broken when we get here, man. And then, you know, we start seeing them at meetings, you know, and then we start talking. And the next thing you know, we're sharing at conventions, right? And that's just my experience since I've been here, right? Like, I'm really living that just for today, today. You know, and it's awesome to see that come alive in other people, you know, as long as I've been here, right? when I was out there using, man, I don't really know if I knew I was powerless. Because I was the kind of addict that told myself I could stop using at any time. I just never stopped using, right? And it wasn't until my grandmother died and she was dying in the street and I was stealing money out of her wallet while she was dying that I realized that I had a problem, right? But the life that I lived, man, when I was in active addiction was just a normal life to me. Right? Like, I thought that that's what life was. I thought that that was what life was always going to be. I thought that that was the hand I got dealt, and I just played it. Right? And my biggest dream using, man, was work at the Green Turtle, live with my parents. When they pass, I take the house over, and I live happily ever after. Right? I don't know how I would afford it any kind of bill. Right? But I don't think that far when I'm using. Right, and needless to say, that's all I believe that I deserve, because that's the life that I was trapped in. Right, I didn't see anything else for myself. I didn't believe that I deserved anything better. I didn't have self-esteem. Right, I didn't have any kind of good self anything about myself. Right, always a negative sense of self. Man, I'm not good enough. I don't deserve. Right, I'm talking about what the disease tries to tell me on a daily basis. Right, and you know what I came to find out, man, through working my first step is that the disease lives in two places. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's obsession and compulsion. Right, and I didn't understand that I suffered from that when I got here. Right, I didn't understand that, like, once I start, I can't stop. I just thought that I just like to do it a lot, right? And that just wasn't the case for me, you know? And, you know, when my grandmother passed, man, and, you know, I was doing what I was doing, I could remember, man, I rushed to the hospital like I cared at the time, because deep down inside, I believe I did care, right? But I also felt like I was doing what I thought should be right, right? And I went up there. And I sped up there, and, you know, I was in a parking lot, man, just getting high, right? Because I didn't know how to deal with how it felt, man, right? And that was, like, the start of my journey, man. I can remember before I went to treatment, right? And I'm not endorsing treatment, right? I'm only endorsing if I speak on where I went. You know, I remember when I went, right before I went to treatment, man, me and my grandfather were standing on the porch, and we were standing up against these pillars, and I was just begging him, man, for some pills so I wouldn't be sick before I left, right? And I'll never forget, right? God bless his soul, man. My grandfather passed this past May. But, you know, he was like, buddy, I hate to see you like this, right? And that's the pain I just never want to forget, man. Right? I don't want to forget them things, man. I feel like if I use today, I'm letting him down so bad, man. And just like everybody that I've grown with since I've been here, my family, my mom still pays life insurance on me. And I've been clean almost a decade. And my mom will tell me, you never know. Right, and she's right. My mom understands. My mom understands that I can take my will back at any time. Right, she's recovering too. She's been in this process with me since I've been here. Right, I still have a brother in active addiction, and you know, I went to treatment. I'm a firm believer that, you know, for me, the best treatment facility was my last one, and I stayed clean for about 9 or 10 months after I had left treatment, and you know, remind you. When I had left treatment, man, I moved into this recovery house, and I was scared to death. I don't know who's new in here, if you're in a recovery house or what, but I can remember my counselor telling me I'm going to a recovery house, and I'm thinking a rehabilitation center for people that are, like, amputees, right? And, like, I didn't know what to think, right? Like, my interpretation of sponsorship was, like, Coca-Cola, Fox Racing, telling me to get a sponsor. Like, well, what do they want from me, right? So I move into this recovery house, and man, I was so uncomfortable, right? I was so uncomfortable. I moved to this recovery house. I was there for 2 weeks. I ended up getting transferred to a different house. And when I got to this house, I was out front for 2 hours waiting for somebody to get there. One of the house managers got there. You know, we greet each other. And he says, let me show you where you're sleeping, right? So we get down this basement. And it's like there's sprickets, cinder block walls, tile floor. It's musty, right? Two twin beds. And I got this guy sleeping next to me that doesn't speak any English. He's got, like, Fruit Loops and bananas everywhere. And I didn't have no sheets. I didn't have no blanket. I didn't have anything when I had got there, right? So I had asked them if they had, like, sheets and blankets, and they were like, yeah, I got you. So next thing, I'm 24 years old. I'm in a recovery house. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm scared to death. I'm on a twin bed, and they give me a Spider-Man blanket to sleep with, right? How did I get here, right? I stayed there for about 9 months. Remind you, it was court-ordered because when my grandmother had passed, I went off the deep end and caused some charges, had to go to court. It was mandatory I stay in this recovery house. I filed a motion that got lifted. Judge tells me that I can go back home. My grandfather sees I'm doing good. I live with my grandparents all my life, right? My grandfather sees I'm doing good. Reminds you, in this process of staying in the recovery house, I had three sponsors by name. In 9 months, I didn't do any step work. I went to meetings where my housemates went. I didn't read any kind of literature. I didn't even own any kind of literature. I didn't do anything that I was supposed to do for me to stay here, right? And most importantly, for me to learn about myself and who I am and my behaviors, right, and my thinking. So I filed this motion. The judge grants that I go home within 30 days. I was using, man, right? I didn't understand that I suffered from the disease of addiction. I thought that I was good, right, until I got around some people, right, that weren't good. And, you know, I thought I was good for a little bit. I'd go over there, they'd smoke, you know, and I'm like, you are, I'm good, man, I'm good. I don't want nothing. I'm clean, you know what I mean? Like, I'm good. And I remember one day, man, I was like, let me get some of that, right? And I had forgot how much I had destroyed my life 10 months ago. I'm talking about consumed and complete self-centeredness, man, without a care about anything else in the world except how I felt, right? And I used. Couldn't stop for like 6 months every day. That's just how it is for me, right? I never woke up one day in active addiction and told myself, well, Mike, you burned every bridge. You ain't got no money. You're not welcome anywhere. You got to sleep in your car. I guess we're just not going to use today. This is not my experience, right? We find in a way, right? And I always did. I never lost hope in active addiction. Ever. I ain't never even lost hope playing Yahtzee. Every time I roll, I think I'm getting Yahtzee. That's just how it is for me, right? I'm talking about when I want something bad enough, I find a way to go get it. Or I believe that at some point in time, I'm going to achieve that, right? So, I was using for like 6 months, man. And my last day using, right, it was bad enough for me, right? And the first step to talk about, even if I compare my, I'm not a verbatim person, but even if I compare, you know, like my addiction to somebody else's, was mine bad enough, right? Yeah, mine was bad enough. I don't ever want to go back to how I was living, right? I don't need to do the things that I've heard other people do that I think were worse than me for me to realize that I got a problem, right? And, you know, man, my last day using, I picked this guy from the bowling alley, and we went to go get some drugs, right? And we get back, and he tell me he can't find it. I didn't realize that he manipulated me to get a ride, right? So we're looking, and I'm like, man, we're going to look for 10 more minutes. If we don't find it, when I get home, I'll look for it. If I find it, I'll bring it back to you. Be a good addict, right? So look, man, I knew he had it, but I never lost hope in active addiction because I'm a just maybe kind of addict. Maybe there's something I can do to fix a relationship. Just maybe there's something I can do to change her. Just maybe if I go back to the casino and spend another $500, I'll hit for $1,000. Right? I'm a just maybe kind of addict, you know? And look, man, I knew he had it, but just maybe he didn't. And I went home and I searched my car for 3 hours. Right on Chesapeake Drive, out front of my grandfather's house from midnight to 3 o'clock in the morning. I searched my Ford Focus station wagon, 2003, gold. I love that car. I searched that car 16 times. We were in the front seats. I searched the car 16 times. I'm talking about like when I would go into the back seat, I would lift the back seat up. I would search. I would go into the hatch, right? And it's like going to the fridge late night where you go in there and don't see nothing. But then you come back because maybe you missed something that was behind the milk. And that's what I would do. I would come back to the back seat. I would lift it up and say, well, maybe it's on top of the seatbelt buckle. I didn't pull that down. Want nobody back there, right? What they say, looking for rocks in a room you ain't smoking, right? And I had this moment of clarity, right? And, you know, I always had these talks with myself, right? And I can remember, like, in treatment, right, they'd be like 5 minutes till group, and I'd be like, well, you know, maybe I can get this cigarette in real quick or finish this and go hit the cigarette for 2 minutes, right? I always had these talks in my head every single day. Traffic lights, it's yellow, can I make it? Every day, right? And something was just like, are you going to keep doing what you're doing, right, looking for something that's not there? You're just going to stop. And, you know, it was that moment I stopped, right? And I started my detox, right? And I started going to meetings in this process, and I heard what to do, right? I can remember this one time I had this sponsor when I got clean in 2014 the first time. And he said, I got your first task. And I said, all right, what you got for me? He said, I want you to write what the disease of addiction means to you, right? And I was so scared to write what the disease of addiction meant to me because I didn't know what it meant. And I felt like if I wrote the wrong answer and told him that he would judge me. So I never called him again, right? I would dodge him at meetings, thinking if I put off that kind of energy, he wouldn't approach me. And he did, right? He approached me. What's up, man? I haven't heard from you. Sorry, man. I'm busy. I'm talking about, like, I'm busy, man. Like, you know, you've been doing your stat work? Nah, man, I got too much going on, right? That's my experience, right? I procrastinate a lot. You know, man, when I got here, right, and when I got clean this time, man, like, I heard what to do, right? I heard get a sponsor, right? I heard work steps. I heard go to meetings. I heard get a network. I heard call people, right? I heard, like, use the tools, right, to help you stay clean. And that's what I did, man. I got a sponsor when I got here, right? I joined the same home group as my sponsor. I don't know how many meetings I went to in 90 days, but I can tell you I went Monday through Friday. Friday I would hit the 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, midnight meeting at St. Martin's. And then I would hit 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock at Woods Presbyterian Church. Right? I did that for a long time, right? Because I didn't want to go back to living how I was living. I wanted to do something different with my life. Right? And I did not know what Narcotics Anonymous was. I just kept coming back. Right? I just kept coming back, man. And, so I got the home group. I joined the same home group as my sponsor. I knew I could see him every Saturday. Also, Friday was a payday for me, so it was important that I had a home group on the weekend because I really like to get high when I get paid and I got money. You know, and, I just started getting indulged, man. I started doing the work, right? I started writing on the triangle self-obsession and self-acceptance, right? I started doing the step work, man, and I started really getting involved, and I started building a network, you know? And I can remember the first time that I really ever started to trust somebody in this process, right? When I joined that home group, they were going up for positions. And they were like, who want to make coffee? Look, I'm 25 now, and I don't know how to make coffee. But I so desperately want to be a part of, right? And I remember when they said, who would have made coffee, man? I had a million talks in my head in about 1 second. And it was like, you don't know how to make coffee. You can't make coffee. If you ask somebody how to make coffee, they're going to judge you. You should just leave now. If you just leave after the meeting and never come back, they'll forget you were even here. I'm talking about the disease working on me heavy. Right? And it sounds so minuscule, but if I would have left, I would have never came back. Right? So I was like, I'll make coffee, right? When the willingness overpowers the fears, when change happens for me, right? So I was like, I'll make the coffee, right? And I was saved because the coffee had already been made that night. But a week goes by really fast. It's been 9 years, right? So my grandfather always say, man, the day is slow, the week is fast. Like, damn, it's Monday. Oh, it's already Friday, right? So, you know, man, this is why I got to my home group an hour early for like 4 or 5 years. So I get to the home group the next Saturday, and remind you how fear runs my life is very simple. Anytime I smelled coffee, heard coffee, Maxwell, Folgers, all I could think about is Saturday's coming, and you don't know how to make that coffee. Right? And I would get so consumed, man. I would get so consumed. Like, I'm the kind of person to apply for a job, and then once I get the interview, I'm scared to go. Right? That's just how I am, right? So I get that hour early, and I'm looking for coffee filters. I'm on a mission, right? I'm talking about, I've been trying to do shit on my own for so long, I'm going to figure it out. Well, needless to say, I looked for coffee filters for a half hour, and I couldn't find them, right? And one of my home group members comes in. He goes, what's up, Mike, man? You just get here? I'm like, yeah, man, I just got here. He doesn't know how bad I've been struggling for 30 minutes looking for coffee filters, and my disease convincing me to just go and you ain't got to worry about it, right? So I say, yeah, man, I just got here, right? And I start looking, and now I'm faced with a dilemma, right? What is there left to do, right? Continue going to the bitter ends, till the meeting starts with no coffee? Or do I ask somebody for help? So now do I have the whole meeting judge me or one person? I can take one person judging me. That's not too bad. I've been judged my entire life. Well, at least I thought of people definitely talk shit about me, right? So, you know, I was faced with a dilemma, man. And I said, hey, man, I can't find coffee filters. He said, Mike, this coffee pot don't use coffee filters. Right? I was like, what? I ain't never seen no commercial coffee pot in active addiction. I don't know about y'all, but I wasn't really too fond of getting a cup of coffee in the morning, right? And he showed me. This is the thing, man, is he showed me how to make coffee. Everything that I've learned here, somebody showed me or somebody taught me, just like an active addiction. Everybody showed me and taught me everything I knew, how to get high, how to drink, how to do this, how to shotgun a beer, how to roll, everything I was taught by another person. Right? So it's no different now that I'm here and I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. right? Like, the easiest thing to do is just ask for help, man, so I can be guided. And sometimes the hardest thing to do. It's the hardest thing to do, even now that I know it's definitely the thing I need to do. Right? Made the best coffee in the world that night. Right? I'm talking about, as an addict, I needed validation. I would go around the meeting and ask people how the coffee was. And people would tell me that the coffee was good. And you know what I would say? I made it. I'm trying to tell you, through doing that and having that service commitment at my home group, because service has kept me clean on my journey, right? I felt at a certain point that I was obligated and was needed to be there to make coffee. And if that meeting didn't have coffee, people were going to be pissed off. Because that pot was empty every meeting. And I know I made good coffee. Right? And I held that commitment for a year, man. Right? I've also had an H&I commitment since I've been here. Right? You know, I'm involved on an area level. My sponsor now I've had for 3 years said, you know, if I'm going to sponsor you, you need to have an H&I commitment. And I didn't have one for a short period of time. Because my first sponsor ghosted me for a year. I had finished the sixth step. My sponsor ghosted me for a year. And we never went over it. So I was completely living in defect. And that was really hard for me to hold on. It was really hard for me to hold on, right? There was times throughout that year that I questioned if I even wanted to stay here. I didn't want to get a new sponsor. I just spent 5 years of my life with this guy, right? I definitely didn't want to start my step work over, right? And long story short, man, I needed somebody to come share this meeting. Thank God for Facebook. I'm grateful for it. I put on there I needed a speaker. This guy commented and said he'd share it. I had no idea who he was. I was praying to God he was clean when he got there. And he drove from Reisterstown to Lothian, Maryland. It was about an hour and 20 minutes to share this meeting for me. And I knew in that moment when he shared that meeting, he was going to be my sponsor, right? And I thought I didn't know this man, but it turns out my friend Lauren that passed away almost 4 years ago, he was a photographer at her celebration of life, and he actually took a photo of me. Wow. Right? And the crazy thing is, I struggle so much with my grandmother who passed away, and her name is Lee. His name is Lee. Wow. Right? And my sister just pointed that out to me like 2 weeks ago. Right? And it's crazy because I was so connected to her, even in active addiction. And I lost that, never got the chance to make any of my wrongs right. And I'm able to be there for him. I'm talking about, he caught cancer when he started sponsoring me. And I was forced to build an emotional relationship with him or leave him hanging. And I feel like I have the best sponsor in Narcotics Anonymous. I love my sponsor to death. We talk on the phone a lot. And it is no short of a 40-minute conversation every time. And I'm grateful for that, you know. So for me, man, it's like, man, I have to turn it over. I have to turn it over, man. I'm so grateful to be here to be able to carry a message of Narcotics Anonymous, right? And, like, this is for me, man. When I share my message, man, it's for me to stay clean, right? And it just allows me to really, really see some things, you know. The last thing I just want to say real quick is my grandfather died May 1st of last year. And I was at work. I was behind. I drive tractor trailers. And I was in the middle of D.C. by Union Station. I get a text message saying my grandfather has 2 hours to live. So my supervisor pulls up behind me to help me with my route. And I tell him, my sister just texted me, my grandfather's 2 hours. He said, take my keys, give me your tractor, I'll finish your route, go home. I stop in Crofton, I get my car, right? And me and my grandfather's thing was doing scratch-offs. We love to do scratch-offs. I always get him his numbers. I shoot down to the house, I stop and buy 2 scratch-offs. I take a step through the door, he takes his last breath, right? And I was the last person that they were waiting for to get there. And when I went outside, I hit that scratch-off for $1,000.
Wow.
Right? And I'm talking about when I'm doing the right thing and I'm living in God's will, man, things are just presented to me, man. And it makes it extremely hard for me to not believe that there's something greater than me out there. Mm-hmm. Right? And it was in that moment that I knew he was still here. Yeah. Right? And I like to be in that mindset, and I don't like to wonder if somebody is watching. It's moments that like that that allow me to get myself to believe, which I like to, that he is still here. And so is my grandmother and everybody that I've lost. You know, so with that, I'll keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.